Hey, it's John from CityCast. If you're in the mood to pamper yourself a little bit this week while supporting cruelty-free products, you should check out Bon Coeur Home and Wellness. It's the best place in Portland to find everything from chic home decor to cannabis accessories. They've got a curated collection of vegan and cruelty-free home goods and wellness products because their name is French for kind heart, after all. You'll get a 20% discount on your first order when you sign up for emails this week at boncoeur.net. That's boncoeur.net and use the code BONCOEURCITYCAST20. Hey, it's John Notariani, executive producer of CityCast Portland. I'm jumping in real quick before we get to the show to let you know there's just 3 days left for you to become a founding member of CityCast Portland. It's the best way to support everything that you get each day from this podcast and the Hey Portland newsletter. Like this interview you're about to hear with Mayor Ted Wheeler, I guarantee you're going to hear him say some stuff you've never heard before. You know, when you become a member, you not only get an ad-free listening experience, but as a founding member, you do get some additional perks, like having your name listed up on our website. It's a pretty cool club. But do become a founding member today. Head over to portland.citycast.fm. Thanks.
Did you know that our mayor is a sixth-generation Oregonian and an heir to a timber fortune whose family name graces a coastal town in Oregon? I mean, you've heard of Wheeler, Oregon, right? Also, he's been in local politics since 2006, climbed Mount Everest twice, and even once owned and operated a Betamax rental store whose customers supposedly included Steve Jobs. And I bring this all up because for the past decade or so, Ted Wheeler has become a bit of a two-dimensional character for a lot of us. He's the guy who won't do the thing that needs to be done. And that thing is always changing. Under his watch, we lived through the Proud Boy riots, catastrophic ice storms, a pandemic, the George Floyd uprisings, an unprecedented housing and fentanyl crisis, and now the complete overhaul of our city's government. He himself wouldn't argue that he might be one of our most criticized local politicians. But yet, he served two full terms, even beating a recall. So today on CityCast Portland, with less than 9 months left to go as the leader of our city and no plans on returning, I'm asking Mayor Ted Wheeler about his priorities before he leaves office in 2025. It's Wednesday, March 6th. I'm Claudia Meza, and this is what Portland's talking about. Julia and I were both, we didn't think about it, and we were both wearing like sports jerseys, and we just looked at each other and we're like, one of us has to change. He's going to be so confused. He's going to be like, is this like a lesbian sports show? Like, what did I get booked on?
Hey, that's all right. I can think of worse.
Well, you know, it's been about 5 months since you declared you aren't running for another term as mayor. And I know when I'm about to leave a job, like, I start caring less about office politics and honestly, sometimes even the job. But I'm curious, is there anything you've been able to accomplish in the last few months that you weren't able to do before because you're just like, bye, you know?
Yes, is the short answer to that question. Look, I don't have to put everything through a political lens. I made it clear when I ran years ago, I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to work on behalf of the community and do what I think is the right thing to do. And it's no secret that I have been frustrated by the pace of change when it comes to addressing homelessness, when it comes to addressing the drug issue in our streets, when it comes to livability, graffiti, litter. The city doesn't control its own destiny. We have to work with the state. The state gets resources. The state owns property. The state has jurisdictions that we don't have in certain areas. And similarly, when it comes to the kinds of crises we're facing, whether it's homelessness, whether it's substance use disorder, or other type of issues, we have to work with the county. The county is the public health authority. The county is the mental health authority. We don't have the people, we don't have the resources, we don't have the expertise, and we don't get the funding for those services. So if we're out there trying to address homelessness, or we're out there trying to address, you know, drugs or criminal activity or anything else, we can't operate on an island. We have to partner. And I've been more direct and more frank than perhaps I've been previously, because number one, the issues are withering and they demand coordination. And second of all, I'm not going to be here for that much longer. And if I really want to institutionalize the kinds of changes we've made, the task sites, the work we've done around street services coordination, the work we've done around public safety, the creation of PMO and our efforts around litter and graffiti, if I want to institutionalize those things, I've only got a matter of months to do it. And so I'm pushing hard. And I know I'm pushing people hard, but I think that's just the way it's going to be between now and December 31st.
Yeah. I have noticed. I mean, I would say we have noticed that you've been a bit more vocal. And honestly, I really like that Mayor Wheeler.
You like the grumpy tech?
Oh, my God. Yes. So the city's new form of government launches at the beginning of 2025. And that's not really that far away. So what are some of the biggest, like, oh, crap, you know, to-do list items for you? Like stuff that you think we really, really need to get done before that happens?
The hardest part of this transition is the part that hasn't happened yet, which will happen between now and the end of the year. And that is, I have to ask my colleagues to do something extraordinary. I have to ask them to cede the authority they are granted under the existing city charter as the direct leaders of bureaus. So operational tactical leaders for their bureaus and cede that to our interim city administrator so we can begin the process of professionalizing the management of the enterprise. That means taking some authority from commissioners and moving it over to our interim city administrator and the professional staff. And we need to make that transition prior to January 1st, 2025. So I'm asking a lot of my colleagues. And frankly, I'm asking a lot of the managers in the city, our bureau directors, all of the people who help lead those bureaus, our city staff, all of our professional staff. But we are in the process of shifting government. We will actually be on the new form of government prior to January 1st, 2025, so that when the new mayor and the new city council come in, the trains will be running on time. Now, that doesn't mean we'll have everything completed, but we'll have most of it completed by then.
Right. Is there a timeline for when that happens with the commissioners?
Yeah, well, I'm not doing this to them. I'm trying to work in coordination with them in a collaborative way. And I think it's pretty safe to say that that will happen sometime this summer. It'll probably coincide with the new fiscal year, which starts on July 1st.
Well, that makes the most sense. Yeah. Okay, so you have 10 months left in office. I wanted to also chat with you about some of your biggest priorities.
That would be 9 months and 6 days.
Oh, do you have an advent calendar?
I just might.
That at the end just says no mayor?
I just might.
Not mayor. Just a little chocolate for you at the end. You're like, nah, not mayor.
It might be somewhat stronger than chocolate what's behind that last door.
Okay, well, you still have like a few things to tie up.
Absolutely.
These are the two biggest ones that come to mind. So last year, your team put a lot of energy behind enacting a camping ban in the city. Last I heard, it was like kind of blocked or stalled by a judge right before it went to effect. Are you expecting to see motion on that anytime soon? Because I also know there's a big Supreme Court case that could affect it. Like, are you at all still pursuing this camping ban?
Yeah, we absolutely are. Just to be clear for your listeners, what we did as a council is we passed a time, place, manner ordinance. That means we can restrict when, where, and how people camp in our city. And to be clear, it is currently illegal to set up an unsanctioned campsite in the city of Portland. But there have been rulings by the Ninth Circuit Court that have complicated that. There are even state statutes passed by the legislature that complicate that. And frankly, we are working hard on a two-pronged approach. The first is we have significantly increased our removal and cleanup of problematic campsites through the expansion of the impact reduction program, as well as the development of a new program called PMO. I won't bore you with the details, but maybe more importantly to the people of this city is they tell us, we don't want you to just sweep people. We want you to help them to connect them with services to help them get off the streets. So about a year and a half ago, we actually went out and we met with about 600 chronically homeless people individually and asked, what would it take to get you out of these unsanctioned camps and into a different situation? And what we developed as a result of that was our task sites. We're going to have several, but our first task site is already up and operating in Southeast Portland. It has 184 slots, so it's much larger than what typically happened. Everybody who comes through the front door of that is assigned a navigator, and they're connected to tailored services for that individual. It could be behavioral health, it could be substance use disorder, it could be public health, it could be job training or whatever, but we connect people to services to help them get off and stay off the streets. We've now had, just in 3 months, we've had over 100 people move into housing, and we have dozens more who are now ready to move into housing. And so we know this model works, and we have people from around the country coming to take a look at it. We're going to continue to expand it. We have two more sites that we expect to have open relatively soon. We've converted all of our Safe Rest Village sites to this model that connects people to services. So you're going to see both. You're going to see us being more aggressive in cleaning up campsites, and you're going to see us be more aggressive to connect people to services to get them off the streets. And I just want to be clear, this is what a lot of homeless people are telling us that they want us to do to help them get off the streets, in addition to, obviously, the people of this city overwhelmingly demanding that we act with urgency.
Right. These sites that you're speaking of, they're the ones that are managed by Urban Alchemy, correct?
Correct.
So back in 2022, you were supposed to oversee the creation of 6 mass homeless encampments in Portland, these sites that we just spoke of. And, you know, some outlets have covered that they're working. It's working. Like, people are finding housing. But that's only one so far. I think there was supposed to be one in St. John's, and I think it stopped because the site is considered
environmental issues. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have to work through DEQ, and we know that. And we're in the process of working with DEQ on that site. We have another site that we're also looking at. And maybe the most important thing we've done is we've also just taken the path of least resistance. We've taken the existing Safe Rest Villages and converted them into the same model as TAS. So by the end of the summer, we're probably going to have about 800 to 1,000 shelter beds, if you will, pods that are all connected to services and all have access to being navigated to housing that is reserved for the populations in the Safe Rest Villages and the TAS sites. But we are going to continue to expand. Everything has to be at scale. And I also just want to point out, Claudia, that when we started down this road a little over a year ago, we had nothing but resistance. People were madder than hell about this. We had providers saying you couldn't have more than 50 people in a site, that we'd never find the services. We had a great deal of reluctance from the governor and from the county chair, who said, look, we don't want to invest in this unless we know it works. So give us the proof of concept. And I have members of my team who actually went out there and single-handedly brought together service providers from the nonprofit sector to provide the services that the city doesn't provide. We don't do drug treatment. We don't do behavioral health. But now we're contracting with people who do. And what I want your listeners to know is now the state is supportive. The governor has put money into this. The county chair is supportive. She has put money and services into this. We're all rowing in the same direction. And this is the first time we've been rowing in the same direction when it comes to the homeless crisis. It came too late. I'll be the first to admit it. But now we're on the path to recovering our city and helping people get off and stay off the streets. And as you pointed out, and others have, it is working.
Yeah, we were one of the outlets that we had a big question mark with Urban Alchemy just because it was coming out, like the lawsuits that were coming out. So we were just a little skeptical. We were just like, well, who are these guys, you know? But I guess my question is, since there's still a few more of these campsites that need to be built, who's going to carry that torch once you go?
Well, part of what we're trying to do is institutionalize it. So it won't be in the mayor's office. By the time this team packs up and leaves, It will actually be part of the city's infrastructure. So the technically it'll be the Office of Management and Finance, but it'll actually be part of the professional management of the overall enterprise. It won't be a creature of one political office or another. It'll actually be part of the city's ongoing infrastructure. And I hate to tell people this, the homeless crisis isn't going to go away anytime soon. We're definitely getting a handle on it. Things are improving. We're now connecting people to the right services. We're doing the cleanup that we need to do. But it's going to, this is a matter of years, not months, in order to fully address this problem. And if I could, Claudia, you started this off with the time, place, manner restriction that is currently being held up by a judge. We are eagerly awaiting the judge's full ruling, to which we're entitled. We have not yet received that full ruling. If we need to tweak it based on what the judge comes back with, we'll tweak it and we'll bring it back to council in a revised form, and we will enforce it.
Yeah. What have you learned about how difficult this process has been?
There's too much government.
There
are too many. I realize Oregonians are historically very, very skeptical about centralized power and authority. And we reflect that through just this scrambled eggs mixture of fragmented government, metro, county, city, state, and the list goes on and on and on, all the way to the water districts. And, you know, while I appreciate that too much power concentrated in too few hands can be a bad thing, it's also true that if you fragment authority too much, nobody can get anything done. And so I spend most of my day, and I'm not kidding you on this, communicating with state and county and metro and other officials about how we need to collaborate and work together to solve a problem that in other cities, they just through executive fiat get it done. It can take us months to do what can take days in other jurisdictions. And I'm hopeful that the new form of government, which by the way is something else my team is working on hard, is transitioning us to the new form of government. I'm hopeful that that professional city administrator with professional management and organizational skills will be able to cut through a lot of the bureaucracy that I deal with on a daily basis. You know, people think it's kind of sad and funny, but you know, I run into people all over the place, the grocery store, and I'll say, "Hey, I got a problem on my street." I'm like, "Oh, sorry, that's Mingus Maps."
Yeah.
Or they'll say, "Oh, you know, I've been trying to deal with this permitting issue forever. Oh, sorry, that's Carmen Rubio. You know, go talk to her." And they're like, "Well, aren't you the mayor?" And I'm like, "Yeah, that means I have exactly 20% of the authority that is vested by the city charter. And then beyond that, you've got the county, you've got the state, you've got everybody else." Now, I will say this. I feel like everybody is trying to pull together in the same direction. I've never seen a legislative body so unified on issues related to homelessness, drug abuse, criminal activity. I've never seen the city and the county working more collaboratively on the issue of homelessness. I've never been in a room with the governor talking about litter, graffiti, bottle drops, and other things in the way that I have under the current governor. So I feel very honestly optimistic about the future. And I can see the turnaround, and other people are telling me they see the turnaround. It's here. The recovery is here. And now we got to talk about how we not only recover, but extend that growth trajectory into the future.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break here. And when we return, we're going to find out what's going on with a 90-day fentanyl state of emergency. We're about a month into the 90-day fentanyl emergency, the declaration that Governor Kotek made. So what's actually happening? Like, any changes that are taking place today that you could say, all right, this is what's going on here and that's what's going on?
Yeah, so it's early in. I'm going to be honest with you. The city was already organized. We already had daily meetings. We have our street services coordination center. We are already pulling together our first responders, law enforcement, street response, the other efforts that we do around livability, litter collection, graffiti abatement. We were already organized as an emergency operations center to look at how we deploy resources. But this is the first time we've had the city, the county, and the state in the same room at the same time for those meetings. And while the city is still leading this effort, make no mistake about it, there's an opportunity here for not only law enforcement and fire and rescue resources, but we're also bringing our outreach and substance use disorder services, the houseless navigation teams, the cleanup teams, all of them get together now first thing in the morning. They're coordinated. They decide, what are we working on today? Where do we deploy our resources? What are our priorities? And part of this that I also like is they review the previous day and they identify what worked well, what didn't work well, what did we learn from it? And so my hope is this isn't a 90-day check the box and we all go home. What I'm hoping is this leads to sustained support, resources, and coordination from both state government and county government working in collaboration with city government. If we get to that point at the end of 90 days, this will be a success.
Right. Who's catering those meetings? Are you guys going through Elephant?
You know, funny you should even say that. Did you know, and you probably didn't, state ethics laws are pretty tight on this subject.
No, seriously, me?
We go through gallons of coffee every day in my office. I pay for it personally. I have spent thousands of dollars this year buying my staff coffee because it's a violation of state ethics rules to use taxpayer money to buy my staff coffee. So one other thing I look forward to when I'm out of here is I'll be buying my own coffee. Thank you.
Oh, man. So there are a few people vying for your seat once you leave. Pretty much all of the commissioners, save for Dan Ryan. I'm curious what kind of person you think would succeed in this role.
Well, first and foremost, you have to be a masochist. And I only say that half jokingly, by the way. Being mayor of Portland is a tough job. And I believe I'm the first mayor since Vera Katz. Yes, I am. The first mayor since Vera Katz to serve more than one term, more than 4 years. And so what I would tell my colleagues is that you have to be very resilient. You can't take things personally. I get called out all the time in public. All the time, whether I'm with my daughter, people don't care. If I'm at the gym, people don't care. Supermarket, people don't care. And so you have to be really comfortable with talking to people. Often people are really agitated about the state of the city. The second thing is your family has to be completely bought in. And, you know, I'm not shy about telling people that I believe my tenure as mayor led to my divorce. Mm-hmm. It was very, very hard on my family, particularly the period that we were going through. So you need family buy-in. You need to be resilient. You need to be an excellent listener, and you need to be flexible because people have very, very diverse viewpoints in this city, from very conservative to very progressive and everything in between. And people need to be heard. And their opinions do matter, regardless of what their political perspectives are. And so you have to be a good listener. You cannot go into any issue saying, I've got the answer. This is how it's going to be. You will always have to shift a little bit to accommodate the public interest and the public need and the public desire. And I think my colleagues, the ones who are running, they're all very different people, but they're all very good people. They're all effective. And I've enjoyed working with each and every one of them. And I say that very sincerely. And I don't always say that about people. And I think the city will be in good hands regardless of who is elected. But I would just point out to those who are going to be casting their votes that these candidates are very different. They have different priorities and they have different styles and different approaches. And people should take that into account when they're thinking about who they want to vote for.
Yeah, I don't know. I was going to ask, since you've served as a mayor since 2017. From then until now, we had a pandemic, a racial reckoning, a worsening fentanyl and housing crisis, a sort of recession. And you've been that face the entire time. So how are you able for it not to get into your skin? Because my feelings would be hurt 24/7.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong. I mean, look, I had a whole life before this. People forget that I served for 4 years as the county chair. I served for 6 years as the state treasurer. I've been in the trenches. And before that, I was a veteran of 3 expeditions to Mount Everest. I snowshoed to the North Pole. I did numerous full-distance Ironman triathlons. I liked a challenge. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that those were all cakewalks compared to serving as the mayor during this period in history. They were easy. And I have constantly had to challenge myself mentally to stay in the game. It would have been very easy for me to pull the plug after my first term. I was not a popular mayor. Let's be honest about it. People were mad. They were mad about the state of the city. And naturally, they would blame the boss. That's me. And I get it. But I had to just pull myself back and say, look, it's not personal. People care about the community. They care about their neighborhoods. They care about their families. And my job is to do my damnedest to improve things and not sit around all day whining about how hard the job is. And I will tell you, it was a tough transition in.
Right. Well, last question. You know, you used to do a lot of mountain climbing. I'm curious what you're hoping to pick back up in 2025, because we'd love to convince you to speak to Earl Blumenauer to maybe finally smoke some cannabis, possibly with you. And I just want a picture, and it would make me so happy. I just feel like that would just be like a great ending to that story. It's like, do you know that he says he hasn't smoked cannabis, not once, until it's legal federally?
You're kidding me.
I know. To this day. Yeah, to this day. He's like, no, why would I? It's not legal federally.
Well, and I never speed as the police commissioner. So there you have it. So in terms of taking things up, honestly, my daughter has had to live through all of this. She will be graduating from high school with the class of 2025. That means I get to spend 6 months out of office just being her dad. And I want to do a good job and help her launch into her future post high school. So that's probably my top priority. And I'm too young to retire, so I'll be doing something else, but it will not be electoral politics. I came from the private sector. I will go back to the private sector. I still have a lot to give. There's a lot of things I want to do. And frankly, my friends are starting to reach out to me with interesting ideas. So we'll just see where it goes.
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time to speak with us, Mayor Wheeler. I mean, I hope maybe you get to come back and do an exit interview style of sorts.
Sure. Why not?
You could be a little bit more candid if you like. We're not going to stop you. Seriously, good luck in the next year or the next. You know how many months you have left.
Yeah, nine months, 6 days.
That's all for today here on CityCast Portland. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend, rate, or leave us a review. It really does help us out. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more from around the city. Until then, see you at Slim's.